Welcome to the Hands On Business Podcast. Where else are you going to come to get tips, tricks, and advice on growing your business? As you know, what people tend to love about this podcast is that it is a place where you can hear real business leaders discussing systems, methodologies, and strategies that they have used to help them catapult growth in their business. So I'm your podcast host, Hakeem Adebiyi, and I've grown several small businesses to multi-million pound enterprises and noticed that there wasn't really a place that focused on where I was, i.e. growing a small business. All of the content that seemed to be out there was about big business and often just a lot of theory and no practical implementable advice, which is exactly why I set up this podcast. So today we talk to Diane Hill, designer and owner of Diane Hill London Art, Print and Accessories. And on today's show, what we're going to be talking about is how to turn a hobby into a business. And that's often the dream, isn't it? You have a hobby that you're really good at and loads of people have said to you, that's so good, you should sell that. And you've never known where to start. That is until today, as Diane will tell you her story, which is effectively exactly that. She was a designer that had an interest in a specific kind of Chinese design, which we'll go into. Now she owns a successful business that is stocked in John Lewis, Brewers and Anthropology, US. She has also featured in Vogue. So continue listening if you want to know how to get started in moving your hobby to a business, or if you want to understand the importance or not of social media on that journey. Also, the power of mailing lists and how to build them, the importance of automation, and how to become a chillpreneur. Don't worry, all will be revealed on that one. Or just listen, because Diane has an engaging and interesting story to tell. Happy listening. So welcome, Diane.
Hi, thank you for having me.
My absolute pleasure. So as I said in the intro, just tell me a bit about your journey from having an interest in design to actually having a successful business and in that area, and specifically, you know, as I mentioned, about Vogue and all those sorts of things. So that everyone would be interested.
Yeah. So I've always known what I'm going to do right from being a toddler. There was never any other option. So that has obviously helped. Like, I would never have gone and got a normal job. So I went through the kind of normal school routine, did an art foundation course, went to study in Manchester in uni, and they want to send you out to do kind of work experience stuff. I started to specialise in wallpaper, I really loved it, and one day I was reading through this book about wallpaper, and I found these wallpapers that were like not repeating. So you know how most wallpapers that you know that are on a wall, they repeat endlessly so that it can cover like an entire wall, like really easily. But this kind of wallpaper that I found was like a scene, like a panoramic. There was no joins, nothing, and it just went on endlessly. Then I found that it was all hand painted. It was painted in China, and it was very much a thing of an export art. So it wasn't actually Chinese. It was actually designed by the Europeans and almost commissioned in China. The Chinese painted it, but they never had those kind of wallpapers on their walls. They had more like plain gold, red kind of wallpapers. And it was shipped straight back to the UK, and it was just used in their home, like palaces and, for the real top end of society, the elite. I just got really obsessed with this, like how the detail was incredible, and they do it all on silk. And so I found there's really not that many people that still do this kind of style. And I found one company in the UK, and there's two in America. There's a few more now, but this one company in the UK, and I emailed them and I asked them, can I come and work for you? I like gave them like a really nice, like personalized email. In fact, I actually emailed tons of companies, but I really, really wanted this one. But you know, you just do it. You email tons, but you always, when you do that, you send a personal, you don't just do copy and paste and then just change the name. It has to be like, you have to talk about them, why you like them, that kind of thing. And I think that worked really well for me anyway. They got in contact and said that I'd come and work for them for a week. And I was like jumping for joy. Where I studied textile design, all of the girls on my course, it was all females, it's like the dream to do something that was like hand done instead of like, I don't know, you'd assume that you'd have to go and do like a dog's body job to start off with. And I just loved it when I got there, and I loved it so much that I just like, I just had it in my head that I'm gonna have to work for them. So I was like, I almost bugged them. So I like kept in touch, like, oh hi, like, I actually, these are the days where you pick up the phone. Oh hi, just wanted to check in, see how, I mean, I'm so proud of my younger self, because I would never like do that kind of thing now. I'd be like, you know, like email or direct message or something. And then like one day they invited me to a little party they were hosting in Liverpool Street. They'd done a restaurant and they had all the wallpaper on the walls. And when I went to the party, I was like, right, let me do something. I painted a cushion for them, like a personalized one, like kind of like weaved their name into it and like made it all really special and gave it to them in a box when I went to the party. And they like, I just remember her being so thankful for what I'd done. And then two months later, oh, wonder if you're interested in a job. And that's how it really goes. So I came out of uni and I went almost straight into an incredible job, something that was so niche, like globally. And that job was just, I mean, it's the only job that I really had from uni. I worked in like pubs and stuff when I was growing up, you know, like normal kind of jobs. But it was the only job I had. And like they sent me to China. I went and learned from master painters when I was there. They sent me around the world. I was working on like luxury yachts, luxury hotels, casinos in Macau, Hong Kong. It was like, it was a dream job. I got to see some things and experience things that were like just crazy to me. And anyway, so I was there for about 6 years, ended up as their senior designer, where I would basically kind of like be directing the Chinese, the studio in China, directing them to paint the wallpaper. So I'd do like a small kind of sample and like maybe a drawing, and then they would make it. And I felt like, oh, I'd love to, you know, like do this myself, like have my own business. So it gets to the point when you're in a job where you, like, you might start itching and thinking like, I need to like grow this bigger, because there's only so far you can just like get in, you know, the corporate world. I wouldn't call it corporate world, it's design. But yeah, so I started, so I had another baby. So I'd already had a baby at uni. So that baby was like seven. Had another baby, and we also moved house at the same time, which is what most people do. So then I had this house to decorate, 3-bedroom house, so happy, had no money. And the baby went in this box room, and I was like, this room is so small, let me use this room to try and showcase what I can do. And all I had was the paints. Like, I just bought a set of paints, acrylic paint from like the like Hobbycraft, and some brushes. And the reason it took a year to do was because I literally did it while the baby was napping.
Oh,
good. So yeah, so he in nap times, and sometimes I'd be there in the evening. So I remember being in there, and like she'd be sleeping in the other room, and I'd just be being in there and just painting away, and then just being a mum. And I remember sitting there and designing things while I was like feeding her and stuff. So I did that room. It took a year, and then like I knew I wanted to start a business, but I would like, you have these fears. This is one of the things that will always set people back, is fear. And anyway, I shared it on just my personal Facebook page, and it, like, I couldn't believe that it went almost, like, not viral, but it was pretty viral for someone with, like, 200 friends on Facebook, you know? And it kept getting shared. And I remember, like, at that time, I was getting really, really heated up. I was like, oh, my God, like this is crazy. Like, I need to take this further. And people kept calling me, and that's when someone from Vogue saw it as well, like, the pictures were like, they were really nice pictures. They were just off my phone, but there's something about the colors that I chose. They were so like bright and vivid that I think it just struck people. And so, yeah, I just couldn't believe it. And that was my first feature with Team Folk.
Blimey, that's how to knock it out of the park, isn't it? To go from, well, I've never done anything, and then I'm now in Vogue. So what was that process like? And what, so it's featured in Vogue, and I'm assuming that really puts you on the map, doesn't it, really?
Well, it does. So it wasn't like a one page, it was a small feature, but people did see me in it. And it does put you on the map, but maybe not like quite as much. I think any business, if you're going into business, I think it takes like 3 years really to really kick off. But it's so good to have anything in print or online right from the start. People, it just sets the seeds. You're planting seeds everywhere. That's what you're doing. And what happened next? So I started a website. I built my own website on Squarespace. Because I kind of assumed that you'd have to hire someone, go for this whole long thing. But then, people would tell me about Squarespace. And bear in mind, this was like 6-7 years ago. So it's like really like well known now that you just go and get your own website in like 2 seconds. I spent 2 weeks and I had a friend who was an amazing person because he came and photographed my house for free and photographed her room for free. Just to help me. And he has like a really like, I mean, I found him from working at the job that I was at before. He used to photograph all of the luxury interiors. So I was very, very lucky. Did that, uploaded the pictures, wrote my little bio. I didn't have anything. I wasn't selling anything. It was very much a portfolio website. And I started an Instagram account. And it was the Instagram account that really put me on the map. And I got really into Instagram, like right from the start. And just even with like a few hundred followers, you just start to get people like talking about you. Then I got my first job. It was a local job. Like I charged hardly anything for it. I think sometimes you do have to work for free or like maybe for less than you'd want to when you're starting out. And did that job, put the photos up, shared the whole process as I'm doing it. You make it seem bigger than it is. I continue painting my house, not really necessarily letting on that it was my house because I want people to think that I'm painting, you know, like I'm painting for other people, like creating this business. So I'm just painting the walls, photographing them. I invested in a Canon DSLR camera. At the time, that was like a really big deal for me. It was about £800. And I learned to use it, watch YouTube videos, learned to take my own photography. Once you've got a bank of professional photography, that really, really sets you up to, you know, for success because it all just looks professional. Like everything, like when you're in design, it has to look slick. Just kept taking photos. And then a lot of it was like to do with relationships as well. Like created on Instagram and I would just like find other people that are in my niche, like that had been there for maybe like 50 years, something that was starting out. And it was just like little things like I had something to paint and there was this guy that I was following. He didn't know me. And I knew that he was like a specialist painter. And I was like, I'm going to call him because I'm really stuck. And he was so nice. Like he was like, do you know what? I've been following you. And he helped me. And it was just from that little thing of me asking him what brand of paint I can use to do this thing. I then started getting jobs through him. And I got a job in like Notting Hill through him in a house that was like exquisite, you know, like a West London exquisite townhouse. And I got this job and then it just kept. And then I got a job in a restaurant in London in Covent Garden, which is still there now, actually. And I love it. I paint the front door. So I've got a little like thing in Covent Garden. So I love like that there's a bit of me there because it's my favourite place in London. Built up, painting murals. And then I started getting into art prints. So the mural painting was great. But it was only what my two hands could do. And I wanted to scale. So like my revenue was kind of like stuck certain, you know, like there's, and I've started getting really stressed out as well, to be fair. Like it was a lot to handle. It was like, how am I going to move from one job to the next? Like they're always delayed, like to work with. And yeah, I didn't, I launched an art print, and like, so I had it professionally scanned. I turned it into this print using a printer in London, and that was my first product for sale on my website. I was so nervous, and to start with, I only sold like maybe like two when it launched, and then I maybe sell like one a month, and then like maybe two a month, and it just grew. And then I thought, well, let me do another art print, and I just did it really, really slowly. And then, so all the while I was doing these murals, and then my husband said to me, because what I was doing is I was getting an order, and I was ordering the print, because I was so scared to like buy stock or anything. So I really built this up like so slowly and on a shoestring. So I would buy the art print from the printer, have them ship it to me, package it again, and then ship it out to my customer. And it was just like not efficient. You know, eating into my margins. And my husband was like, there must be that your printer must be able to do this for you. And lo and behold, they have a drop shipping service. And I'm like, whoa. So it took a lot to set up, to be fair. But what they do is they can hook up to your website, and an order will go through on your website. It will go directly to them. You do nothing. They print it. They ship it out to your customer in a white label brand, unbranded kind of thing. And that changed everything for me. So it meant, you know, you can make sales while you sleep, and you don't lift a finger. Other than to deal with a bit of customer service if something goes wrong, but they handle that anyway. Like if it's like lost in transit, and to be honest, like the prices are totally fair. Like I've just made sure that I had a really decent margin on it, a margin that I could offer sales when I want to, you know, offer wholesale if I wanted to, something that I don't do. But yeah, just make sure that it's all priced right. And so I expanded that collection, and everything changed in the summer of 2020 when COVID hit. So it would already have been good for me, because it was good for every online business, especially people decorating their homes. So I'm selling, you know, things to make people feel uplifted. And then at the time when the internet was going absolutely mental with Black Lives Matter, I just literally just thought, oh, it'd be really good to do a charity artwork. And I love soul music. I'm really, really passionate about my music, and I love any way that I can bring my music into my work. And the song by Sam Cooke, Change Is Gonna Come, I was like hearing that, you know, it all around the internet. I thought, let me do an art print. I did it really, really quickly. I kind of like painted A Change Is Gonna Come, did some birds to symbolize freedom. And like I did it blue, because blue is globally like the most loved color. So there's all these things, and I made it really, really easy for people to buy. I priced it at £35, free worldwide shipping, which is something that actually my the company that drop ships for me, they made that really easy to offer. Like they have like a standard shipping cost of about £6. It was then anyway, £6 per order. I priced it at £35, one size, one buy button, no options. And I launched it, and sales coming every month. I was at that time, I had on my Shopify site, because I actually changed my website to Shopify in between this part of the story. I had the cha-ching on the app, and it was just cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. And it was a charity print, right? I mean, I was so excited, but it was 100% of that I said I was donating to charity. So great, I was getting sales. All of it was going to be going. But then what happened was people were coming on and they were buying my work as well. So I was being seen in the background of all of this. My Instagram account went from zero to like many thousand. I think I grew from like 20,000 to like 90,000 pretty much in like a month or two or something crazy. Yeah, so they were buying my work. And my revenue shot from like, I mean, I think I was making like maybe like a few hundred pounds in a month revenue from these art prints, which I thought was amazing. And then I think that month there was like something like £13,000 worth of revenue just on my art prints alone, let alone the art prints. So the ones that once I'd taken all the profit, once I'd taken off all the costs, I think it was about £13,000 I donated directly to these charities, mm-hmm. which was insane. I mean, I was very worked up at that time. I was very like, what the hell is going on? I was like a nobody. And then suddenly everyone knows who I am. And, you know, I think I sold like over 1,000 of these art prints. And then I thought people were having these in their home, like they've got this message in their home, and that's like it had my signature on it because they can print my signature at the bottom, which is a really nice touch. And it was just like a beautiful thing all around. And I really just thought that I would make a few hundred pounds in a charity donation. That'd be amazing. I would have been really pleased with that. But it just took on this, the craziness. And that was the changing point for my whole business. So having all these followers and people started to notice me even more. And I basically, long story short, quit all of the mural work, all of the custom work, because it was already, I was already sort of like coming towards the end. I was like, oh, you know, anytime I get a new job, I'm like, oh, I've got to stand up a ladder, I've got to, like, you know, all this hard work. And I just worked out that people want my art if they can see my art. So it's all about, like, you can have the best product in the world. You can have, like, the best talent. If you cannot market that and get out, you know, to the world for the world to see, then there is no one's going to buy it because they can't see it. So I was like, oh, okay. And then so like I started like dabbling with Facebook ads because like it tailed off, like all of that kind of like tailed off from like the extreme revenues, like kind of. And then I was like, right, let's just try Facebook ads. Let's try like increasing my video quality. Like let's really like look into like hashtags and, you know, spreading further like TikTok, Pinterest, YouTube Shorts, all of that. Like I want to be all over the internet as much as I possibly can. I want my art, my face, everything. And then if people can see, they're going to buy. So that really has been my strategy. I feel like I could almost call it like an Instagram business, a social media business, because that is where my audience is. And it was just such a slow burner. And people might say, oh, you're lucky because this thing in 2020 like changed everything for you. But it's kind of not, because like you work and you work and you work, and then you can have like, you're sure to have a moment like that, right? Everyone's sure. It's not just luck. It's you just keep working and you keep being like really passionate, really driven. And those moments, it's like the law of attraction, right? It's karma. Like it's going to come as long as you're super, super passionate.
It's funny that, you know, they say that the harder you work, the luckier you tend to get, because I don't know many people who are successful in business who are actually really lucky. It's either they, you know, you can have two people who get the same opportunity, one of them becomes super successful and the other one doesn't. It depends how you take the opportunities that come your way. So during this process, when was it you stopped working and you were just saying, right, I'm just going to work, I'll be working myself, I'm not going to do anything else? What point was that?
So at the time, just before I painted my daughter's nursery, so this would have been 7 years ago, that's when, like, I wouldn't say I quit. There was like, it was an awkward thing of like, I wanted to work a bit flexibly and they weren't having it. So I was like, well, you know, it's not going to work out. So, and then, yeah, so I just cut all ties. Like, I haven't worked for anyone since then at all. So yeah, this business has been 7 years now.
Okay, so I mean, it's interesting actually, because I mean, I want to ask you for some top tips as I always do all my guests, but the way that you've done it is very interesting, because there's only one other person that I know, who's a good friend of mine actually, who told us when we were all at university that he's never going to work for anybody, and you and it's exactly what you just said, and he went through exactly the same path. Now, he went into coaches actually. And I remember him telling us at university, and we were all like, what's he talking about? University, we're going to get a job. And he said, I'm not going to work for, but he didn't want to work for a coach company for about 2 years, just to learn all the contacts. And then he just set up his own business.
Yeah, I think it's really actually important to go and get a job if you can. Like, I just think the experience, the things that I knew. So when I went in on by myself, like, there's little things I knew, like, you need to do a sample for someone. The amount of artists, like mural artists I see now, I'm not doing samples of people. I'm like, well, they're just going to argue that it doesn't match, you know, things like that. I just learned that, like, you have to have a contract, you have to have a sample sign off approval form. I put the picture of the layout, I put the picture of the sample, you sign it, you pay this amount of deposit. Everything is very structured, very business. It's not just like, we'll see how it goes. No, it had to be a business from the start. I just don't think that I would have known all those things without having that job. You don't necessarily, I mean, I stayed there for 6 years, but you don't necessarily have to stay for too long. Like, your friend, he's like, I'm doing this, very like focused on what he's doing. I'm going to get this job and I'm going. So yeah, I think experience is key, but it's not to say that you couldn't just leave uni and set up. I just think it takes you a bit longer. You have to learn these things the hard way, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's where other way you can, learning things the easy way, I think, is always preferable than don't go through loads of pain to do it. Sometimes you have to, but if you can shortcut it, why wouldn't you? Which is actually the reason why I do the podcast. So I'm hoping that people will listen and pick up tips. Oh, yeah, I could do that, couldn't I? Because what I found interesting was, actually, if I'm just looking at your business, obviously you got experience, you got understanding, you learned how to really structure your business so that you weren't making mistakes when you started the business.
Yeah.
Then you then looked at effectively a marketing strategy, because you said you went onto Instagram, you spoke to friends, and you got friends to help you out, which, you know, is one of the main things people do in business, but you're very clear what you wanted to do. And then really the key thing, there's two key things which I picked out of that story. Was the first one is about scaling and identifying a way to scale, because I think your story is very common, where people, you know, start a business, then they start getting successful and the business is all them. And it's like, how am I going to go from, if I'm not working, I'm not getting paid.
Service-based business.
So I think that you know, and depending on your business, it'll be something else. It might be automation, it might be getting more people, whatever. But yours was ArtPrint, which I thought was really good. And then the other thing that I always talk about when I'm in business is you had a compelling event, which was obviously George Floyd, etc. But the point is, what you did is you took advantage of it. Now, actually, you took advantage of it for a charity point of view, but that automatically gets your name out.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a really important point for people to understand, is because there's lots of things that happen, lots of events, lots of social events that occur, things that are happening out there that people don't actually realise, actually, I can utilise this
100%.
Either for a charity point of view, but even if you just use it for charity, because I do quite a lot of charity, and I do charity bike rides, and I'm not actually selling anything. But every time I do a charity bike ride, automatically you get much more eyes on your profile because people are interested in what you're doing. So if you've got a business and you can then link it in, which yours is, because it's all about prints and imagery.
You just got to be on the ball all the time. even just like things like when it comes to Christmas, do some Christmas stuff.
Yeah.
Valentine's, do some, like, just always be like thinking of a reason to relate to people and whatever's going on in the world at that moment, because they're going to connect more emotionally, and emotional connection is the key, and storytelling, things like that, it's just the key for people. And like honesty and being like really kind and talking to your audience all the time. Like, I mean, the relationship I have with my audience is amazing. It's like a community that I've set up now. And like, I know my, like, I think that's another thing. You have to know your audience, know your customer. Like, you have to like almost create them as a person, like, you know, describe them as if they are a person with characteristics and like their favorite colors and what they do for a living, all that kind of thing. So yeah, like, it's just all about connections.
No, it's what I mean. The thing is, I mean, people say it, and it seems like it's a very glib saying, but people do buy from people, because actually in your area, there's not that, I don't think there's that many people doing exactly the sorts of design you're doing, but there are people who are doing it. Mm. And the question is, okay, so why am I going to buy from Diane Hill as opposed to somebody else? And that is all around connections, because you feel that they will feel that they have a connection with you and will want to buy from you rather than somebody else.
100%. And like, you know, that is your brand as well. Like, I think I went into this thinking that a brand was like a logo and a website and some colors, but it is literally how people perceive you and everything around it. Like, you know, the way you respond to people, like publicly, things like that, that is your brand. And that for me has been super, super important. So actually I mean, I created this all myself, like this brand, like I like drew my logo. And then, what was it? Maybe like a year or a year and a half ago, I paid for a rebrand. Like, I paid for a website to be created, which for me, like I've always been like, I'm going to do everything myself, you know, like I'm not spending out all this money. But like, as you build up and, you know, like, you make money, you invest it back in. And so like, I've got this whole, like, they presented to me like a brand, they talked to me like this for ages, like understood my personality, created a persona of my business. They're like, Diane Hill Design is like joyful, uplifting, warm, friendly, all that kind of thing. Created all these colors and then I really feel, and then did me a new logo as well. And I really feel that just like it made everything like a bit more slick. So my website now looks like just, you know, a bit more professional, like it's a bit more tied together. And that is one thing that it can be difficult for artists in a way, I think, because you just get too into, I don't know, like your own favorite colors. So you just pick your own favorite colors, but it's those like color psychology and stuff that you need to really learn about. And I did buy a book, and you always try and like buy books, go on YouTube, try and do things yourself. But I think like advice to people who have a hobby is like, know when to outsource for sure, because otherwise you will not be able to scale if you can't. So what are the three things? It's automate, delegate, or eliminate. Otherwise, yeah, you're just going to be stuck, I think. And it's so hard. Like for me, I've chosen to automate. It's been my like biggest thing. I absolutely love it. I've really dabbled with hiring people. I've settled on the fact that it's not for me, because actually my main goal in business is to do the least amount of work possible or like the highest goal.
Yeah.
And so like I did graft hard for the first like 4 years, I'd say, and then I slowly like come to this realization that I got this term from someone, a book I read called The Chillpreneur, and that's how I want to be. Is so I automate, I delegate out to freelancers.
Yeah.
I won't hire, like I just can't deal with it. I feel like for me, in the way I want my life to be, the minute I start to hire people, I just think I'm going to start getting all stressed out and stuff. And I can't be stressed. Like, I do this because I want to be happy and healthy. And I'm like totally content with how things are going and I'm growing it. And I think it's, you know, what's that saying? Like, slow wins the race. What's that saying? Yeah. Slow and steady wins the race.
Slow and steady, yeah.
And I really think that's it. Like, it can feel frustrating. It's taken me like six years to get to this stage. And I look back at what I've achieved. I'm like, oh my God. But then, you know, the next 6 years, then what? Like, I can do it without hiring people. I know I can. I've done it this far and I'll do it my own way. And I think like it really just has to make the person happy, because I've just seen too many people burning out and like just losing like the love of it and the passion, and that's really sad. So I just think like just stay really calm and like, you know, I mean, that's just the way I do it. I just want to chill.
I think that, I mean, I've been outsourcing for I don't know how many years. I have that conversation with people all the time, because you see them getting stressed out, working 12-hour days. And my question is, so why are you doing this business?
Yeah.
If you're actually working harder than if you're in a job.
Yeah.
And you're not enjoying yourself.
Time. Yeah.
Yeah. So, because you do see a lot of people who think that actually having a successful business means having loads of people underneath them. And I say, well, actually, you could get all these people, actually, in a lot of cases, for a lower cost, because you don't have to pay national insurance, you don't have to pay holidays, and you get a good relationship with them so they understand your business, and you work, and you get them to do the work when you need the work, as opposed to, well, I need to fill people's time because I've employed them. I think that's a critical. So give me your five top tips. I'm having that one. How to or when to outsource.
Okay. Yeah. I'd say, so this is something that I learned too late on. And this is the one thing that I say to people now, is build your email list from the start. Build it. It is the most important thing. Instagram could stop working in an instant. And do you know what? It's scary because my account, it grew and grew and grew. And like, it looks like a huge account. It is. It does do really well, but it's now on the decline. So I lose followers now. And I'm just like, you know, it cut out, didn't it? Like, the whole of social media cut out for like however many hours. And it's just these little things. And now it's like changed so much. Like, God, you have to just be like an influencer or something to really grow now. Like, businesses being on Instagram is so much harder to try and sell people stuff. So it's changed so much. I'm like, whoa, like, I need to own my audience. Like, it's so sad that I grew 117,000 followers and, you know, like, what was it? Matter of 5 or 6 months ago, I had 2,000 people on my email list. 2,000 out of 117,000 followers, only 2,000 of them were on my email list. And I just thought, I was kicking myself. If I had just, I mean, I couldn't have known, right from the start. But if I had just pushed that, those 117,000 could have been on my email list. And I can guarantee that they're going to receive what I have to show them. Because there's nothing worse than someone saying, oh my God, like, I didn't know you had this. And I'm like, I've been pushing these videos out, but Instagram chose who they're going to show them to. They only show like 1%, between 1-10% at max get to see yourself. So this
is a critical thing that I think I'm hoping people now understand that more, but there's still lots of people. There's a mutual friend of ours that we're just talking about. That's the first thing I said to that individual. I said, oh, what's your mailing list? Oh, I don't really have. Sorry. I said, you need to get, because what people don't understand is, if you just said Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, as we saw with Elon Musk, LinkedIn, they own the data.
Yeah.
So they show it to who they like. They can ban you at any particular time they want to ban you. And if you've got the bigger your following, the more at risk you are. And as
God, I see people lose their accounts. They lose it. It's gone. Like, I mean, that's terrifying to me.
Yeah.
But yeah, so back to the email list. I learn all this stuff from podcasts, so I'll go into that after. But I learned quite a few tactics. You hold little online events. Every time you launch a new product or a new collection, it's people on the mailing list are going to get this first. Sign up to the emails, and you will get the first chance to buy. So people signed up that way. So in the last 6 months, I've been able to grow from 2,000 people on my email list to now 6,500 people on my email list through things like that, competitions, pop-ups on your website, freebies, all sort, like any little thing that you can think of that you could like, is it like a, almost like a no-brainer for someone to get them on your list. And at the moment I've got one running. It's a big one. It's the biggest giveaway I've ever done. But it's to win an original painting, a small one. It's a small original painting that I know will take me about an hour, and it will be custom colored to that person's requirements. So I had it running from about, I think, October, November. The last, really, you need to be collecting emails from like second quarter. Like you want to be collecting them so that when it comes to quarter four, you've got them there, and you can just show them all your deals at the time when they're peak buying. So start collecting those emails with this offer of a competition. I made a little video, win a custom artwork, created like a nice landing page for it where they come on and they sign up. There's also shopping links. Like, let me shop so that you're not all, you have to always be like promoting what you've got to sell and whatever you do. And then I realized that the video did quite well. I got quite a few signups. So then I ran a Facebook ad on it. I don't run the Facebook ads. I get someone to help me. But and then that, like, it, you know, expanded it. And I've now got, just from like one, so I put all those entries into one segment of my email list. So I keep them in a separate segment and just like keep an eye on them. And then I would market to them differently to my normal email list as well. Like I wouldn't just like pow, like buy this. You have to be like really sensitive with those people. And yeah, I think, yeah, I got 1,500 new subscribers from that, which is great. Like really, really good just from holding a competition. So, you know, it's going to take me an hour. It's going to be some really good video content because people are going to see, I'm going to shout about it. Yes. Here, I'm going to, hopefully that person, the winner, is going to hopefully let their face be seen or something like them holding it. You know, you create like this, like engaging, like community sense, and they trust you as well. And then going forward, I'll just run another competition like that, 3 months for 1 hour's work, and you know, like spreading some love. So things like that for email lists is amazing, because social media, like, don't get me started. It's not to be trusted anymore.
No, it's not. I'm not sure it always has been, because the algorithm, they're always changing and not telling anybody, and you. Yeah, you know, you have to be really on top of it to know what's going on. But even because I started really getting into Facebook marketing probably about 10 years or so ago. And it was like the Wild West, and you could make a lot of money then. Facebook ads were super cheap. No one was really doing it. You had great opportunities. But even then, everybody who was in the know kept saying, you need to enjoy it now, because sooner or later, it's going to change. Yeah. Has it changed?
Oh, God. Yeah, I don't do Facebook ads. I tried it, and I, like, at the very start it did really well, and then I was just wasting money. Yeah. So I don't do them now. I only do them for things like you know, where you're not trying to get people to buy. So subscribe, like, great to subscribe, like getting a cold audience to try and buy your artwork is just, you know, not so great. Maybe works for like teeth whitening stuff, you know, like people like instantly like, yeah, I need it. But artwork, I think you've got to like build a relationship with that person. So I could maybe run an ad to like follow me on Instagram or something, and then they can, you know, learn more. And then hopefully they'll become a subscriber. So it's just all about getting them down that chain to the bit that I own. But I think like with social media being the way it is, I'm now looking for, my 2023 goals are to put more content that I own out. So blog content, helpful things that people are searching on Google. Try and get someone to help me with the SEO of that. Try and make sure, because chinoiserie is like a really niche thing. So I actually, I'm like quite near the top of like a lot of the pages, which is great. And I can hopefully expand that by utilizing the keywords. Just trying to be as helpful as I can to people, because it's just not working anymore to just try and sell without a story. You can't just sell without, you know, like really drawing people in and really trying to help them. Like things like, I don't know, like you have to try and like figure out what their problems are and try and address them, like, oh, ways to frame art above your bed or something, like 10 ways to choose a color for your, you know, all these kind of things.
Yeah,
that's what I'm trying to focus on.
So content,
yeah.
I'll call this randomly. I'll say content, and then you've got you build your email list. You've got quite a lot of ideas around how to build your email list, and with the competitions pop ups, and then know when to outsource as well. So, and then is there anything that you'd say, you know, you're interested in, you've got a hobby, you think it's an opportunity to make a business? What are the things that you'd want to avoid if you were to do it again?
It's been so like organic. I don't know. Like, I just feel like it's just all worked so well so far. Like, I haven't really like had like any major like mistakes that I've had to a tremendous thing that set your business back. I haven't had anything like that. I found the drop shipping. That was great. What to avoid? Just like the mailing list, like I could have done that.
Yeah.
Like that. Yeah, that's a bummer.
Avoid selling your soul to the social media devil.
Yeah, maybe that one. But at the same time, it did everything for me. So it's a real like love hate. It's so difficult.
I think it's good to be on it, and I think you can utilize it. I think it's the people that suffer are the ones that think that actually, if I've got a big following on social media, I'm okay.
And
that couldn't be further from the truth.
Oh, no. No, like a lot of the people that do the best and have got the highest revenues, they've hardly got any followers. And the ones that have got big, they're not necessarily selling stuff. They just have really good engagement.
Yeah.
Nice to make a good video. It means nothing. I'm trying to think.
No, it's all right. I think we'll go with the social media one. And one of the things you just mentioned there is that you obviously listen to podcasts and you get advice. So what's the best piece of advice you've either listened to or you being given in terms of your business?
Podcast is one of those things that I was going to put in the top five tips as well. Learning. Always be learning. Like, I wouldn't be here without, I obsessively listen to business, podcasts, audiobooks, reading blogs and stuff. Do you know what? Almost everything that I've learned has been from like a podcast or whatever. That's where I learned to build my brand and focus on my brand. So I read a book called How to Build a Story Brand, I think it's called, something like that, by Donald Miller, which I found from listening to someone on a podcast talking about. I read that book. I think I read it twice over, and that's when I really approached someone and I was like, look, I need to sort my brand out. That has been amazing for me. I learned all about the email marketing. I was on MailChimp before. I learned all about one called Klaviyo, which is super, super popular. It's quite expensive, but if you've got a Shopify website and you're selling product, it links so well. Like, it's just, it's seamless, and it can, like, you can just divide people up, and all of that I learned from people talking about it on podcasts. My mind's going blank now, but I think they're the two biggest things that I've learned from.
No, I think podcasts are a very good source. Obviously, I do because I'm doing a podcast, and I learned about podcasts from a podcast actually. Because I remember I listened to it's called the Hustle and Flow podcast, two American guys.
Okay.
And I thought about it before, and they do all marketing stuff basically, and they do really action based thing. And what because at first you think, you know, I've got to be really serious, I've got to be really, you know. And then I just thought, when I listened to them, I just thought they seem to just be enjoying themselves because there's two of them and they're bouncing off each other.
They just seem like
they seem like normal guys. And I thought, I could do that.
Like I think people think that business people have to be like professional and hide like their emotions and be all, you know, but actually they're just people. And I talk to my customers like I talk to my friends, and they understand me when things go wrong. Like I always just like keep them updated. And I'm like, I'm really sorry, like this isn't gonna get to you in time, whatever. And they always be like, oh, it's okay, don't worry. And yeah, you just chat like you're a friend. And I think people really appreciate it. And you know, like that's all we are, aren't we? Like we're humans, and especially like with like the mental health crisis, there's no reason to like, you know, like be all rigid, like I'm a business person. Like you're just a human.
Yeah, I think, and so I'm going to ask you, because I can't believe the time's gone that quickly, actually. I feel like I've been here
really?
I feel like I've been here for 10 minutes, but it's like I expect to get that one. It's amazing how quickly it's gone. So if there was one thing that you could leave people with, and it can be anything, what would it be? If, like, they listen to this podcast, what's the resonating thing that you want to leave them with?
For me, and this is like what I just always say, like over and over again, it's like, as long as you've got passion and determination, I just think you're going to be okay. Like passion, like if you don't have the passion, then like just forget it, literally forget it, move on to something else that you are passionate about. And yeah, like I don't know, like they say, what is it about like chefs who like, it's like unfortunate that they are passionate about cooking because like they have to like go and work in a kitchen, right? And like I mean, like it's like one of the most stressful jobs, but like as long as they're passionate, I think like you just have to just pick what it is that you love in life and absolutely go for it with everything. Be super honest all along the way. Like honesty is always the best policy. Be super, super kind. Cherish your audience, like just make sure that your customer service is exquisite. Like customer service is for me everything. Like if I'm dealing with a company and they're not going to help me out, like there is no chance I'm ever going near them again. And I just think like that's what I do. Like I will bend over backwards for my customers. And it's just all about like, and that just links to the passion behind it. Like if you're passionate, you will just like let that echo through every single thing that you do. So yeah, just passion.
No, I think we get that. And it's interesting actually, because I always say every time if you go to a restaurant or whatever, and I know people do a job because they need to make money, but I'm always, you know, when someone's like really miserable to you, I always think, why are you doing a customer facing role if you're that miserable? Go and do something else.
Yeah.
Don't work in a warehouse or something. Life's so short.
Only
do what you enjoy doing, because otherwise, you know, what's the point?
I know, 100%. Yeah, and I really feel for people who don't quite know yet what they want to do. Yeah. But I know that there is something for everyone. They just haven't found it yet. But yeah, just find it. As soon as you start feeling passionate about it, like just run with it. And I know you can turn anything into a business for sure.
Well, thank you very much, Diane. It's been an absolute pleasure. I'm probably going to have to get you on again because that seemed to go so quickly. And I'll definitely get you on for a round two. Because sometimes this happens to me. I'm so enthralled with the stories, and I'm sitting there thinking, this is great. It's very interesting. I think, oh, maybe I should ask a few questions. And I thought, oh, the time's gone. So I'll definitely get you back on if you have to get some more, dig more into, because I know there's lots of people. I speak to them once. I was speaking to about, I was speaking to a couple of people the other day who were talking about the bit that I want to do a business. And they're like, but I'm not sure what it is. And I was saying, well, you're passionate about this. Yeah, I know, but I'm not sure about this. And they'll give me all these things that they were going to do. And I'm thinking, well, you're not passionate about that. Why would you do? Why would you?
Don't pick a business that you're not passionate about. I don't know. It wouldn't work for me anyway. You'd end up burning out. You'd end up stressed out. And you're always just going to do the best. Like, everyone will see it. Like, they can see your passion. It's just so evident. And that is your brand, isn't it? Like, you're an amazing brand if you're, joyful along the way.
Well, thank you very much. And as I said, I'll be tapping you up for another session. But I hope people watched it, enjoyed it, and actually got a lot out of it. So I will see you in the next episode.
Thank you.
And as they say, that's all, folks. Absolutely loved chatting to Diane, as she's done what so many people aspire to do. She's taken the hobby that she once had, and now she's a successful business owner. The key takeaways for me really were the importance of the mailing list versus social media. Remember that. As all marketing gurus say, the money is in the list. And that's exactly what Diane confirmed and believed that. And so do I. So in addition to that, she talked about automation and really talked about how automation is what can grow your business and reduce your workload, leading to you becoming that chillpreneur. Now, I'll definitely be getting Diane back on, as I said, on the show, because we've only just scratched the surface of this story. Don't forget to check out the show notes at www.thesalesaccelerationformula.com. And as always, subscribe, like, and share with your friends, colleagues, and anyone else who may be interested. But most of all, and I keep saying it, and thank you very much for those who do, keep the feedback coming so that we can continue to improve and give you more of what you like. Hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Keep listening and keep growing.